So welcome everybody. I'm very happy to see such a good turnout today. I hope you will enjoy the program. We feel very honored that Professor Aurobindo Basu's son, Robert, is here with us today, and Mosumi, his assistant, and they requested us to organize this program, and they wished, since Professor Basu was a philosopher, they wished there to be a philosophical talk, and they've invited our own Asta to give a short philosophical talk, which I'm sure we'll all enjoy very much. And after that, we will have an opportunity for sharing. Those who knew Arindam Da, anybody who would like to say anything, we'll pass the microphone around for a sharing. But first, we are going to show you a little film which has been prepared here at Savitri Bhavan over the last couple of weeks, together with materials provided by Robert and Mosumi, and what we found in our archives. Tatiana has prepared this little film, which will give a kind of overview of Arindam Da's life. So welcome to everybody. Enjoy. The next part of our program would be to invite Asta to take the speaker's chair here. And perhaps she has a few remarks to share about Arindam Da, and then tell us about her research.
Being present on this occasion in Savitri Bhavan, and I won't say remembering Arindam Da, because what we have just seen has given us a very living, palpable presence of his work, his life, and what he has given to all of us. I'd like to thank Shadavan and Robert for giving me this occasion to be here, because there are things I would like to share. Arindam Da, when he used to visit the ashram, like was mentioned in this little documentary, used to visit my father, Dr. Indra Sen, who was, I think, in the same field as he was. And I was a very young student in the house, so I used to see him around and sit in one corner of the room while they conversed. I guess that is education, to be present when these things happen. Much later, at a time when I was studying as a more senior student at the Sorbonne, and he was still in Durham, he visited Paris on a number of occasions, and I had the opportunity of sharing my work with him and discussing with him. When he returned to the ashram to live here, we had occasion on two counts. At one time, he was giving some classes on the life divine in the ashram, which I was very happy to be part of. And we had interacted with a number of other projects and works at the same time. Apart from these personal reminiscences, which I think have the place on an occasion like this, what has remained with me all my life is his absolute single-minded devotion and focus on Sri Aurobindo. It was something straight like that. Sri Aurobindo's existence, his work, written work, the living out of it, was the one thing which held his whole life together as one piece. I was very happy to see right now in the documentary the last bit where he says that the one thing to be done is to realize the divine. That focus on Sri Aurobindo and this final statement, if I may say so, it's like a testament. Testament and shall we say, a record of his experience? Or that's, I think we can more or less presume that. This said, the term philosophy that Shatavan has used in the context of the Orville life and experience really means action, and it means yoga. Because philosophy is a term that is commonly used, and therefore it's commonly used even for the works of Shabindu, but he would be hard put to accept it as something being doing justice to his work. And that is what moves me. It's really action. And in that context, when Robert asked me to share some of my I won't say impressions, but you know, at different moments of one's life, there are things that hold one as the one reality to be focused on. So it came to me when he asked me for a subject, I said yes, Sri Aurobindo, the transition of our times. It's a very big subject, vast one, spending and stretching out over decades, but a few landmarks could be touched upon, with which we're all very familiar, but maybe a certain historical perspective gives one a more acute sense of how great is the transition that we're living through. We know we are living through transition. It is not just a matter of change, a sequence of changes. It is much more radical than that. A transition marks an epochal shift, change in the very process of evolution, where things change from one level of existence, one level of being and reality to another. And that is Sri Aurobindo and the mother. We, in fact, are beings of transition. At whichever point of the transition we may have crept into, that depends. That's an accident of birth or our personal quest. But we are all beings of transition. What is that transition? How has it stretched out? It is he, Sri Aurobindo, who is the master craftsman of that transition. And she, the mother, is the one who makes it possible. Otherwise, the transition could not have taken place. No wonder it is said that it is a divine dispensation that they should both come on earth together and work together. One goes back to the time, end of 19th century, when Sri Aurobindo, soon after his return from his education in England, started to fight for the freedom of India. It was he who single-handed, in a sense, forged ahead looking for the complete freedom of India from colonial rule. Today, it is very easy to think of that as history because it's something that we take for granted. But nonetheless, it marks the beginning of a transition, at least as I perceive it, that was a time when history's record of empires, of colonial rule, was put aside. It began with India, it spread to the whole of Asia, it spread to large parts of Africa. That was the beginning of the transition as I see it, which 100 years and more down the line seems history. But the transitions of an epochal nature, the transitions in evolution, are not matters of a few years. They may be not only matters of decades, they may be matters of centuries, one doesn't know. But where we are placed today, we at least see 100 years or more down the line. This was the same time, around the turn of the century, which Robert would perhaps be very aware of. Especially in Europe, there was a completely new turn of thought. There was the beginning of an acceptance that there were powers other than the rational, other than those of the mind, that were perhaps present in the human being, the intuitive ones, the subjective ones. It was the rise of subjectivism, whether it be in political thought or in historical interpretation, even to use the word philosophy, new trends in psychology, in literature, in art, with the coming of Impressionists and all the rest. There was a whole turn of the set. It's interesting, while the East was gaining its freedom, in Europe you saw suddenly the rise of an acceptance that there was the mind, the rational being in a human being, but there were also other powers, intuitive, subjective, which was known in ancient Europe, but for many past centuries they had been receded into the background. Followed by this, I'm sorry, do you have a problem?
I'm just saying the voice is very soft.
So what should I do? Louder? Is that better? Is that better? This period was immediately followed in succession by the two major world wars. Fortunately for us today, it is history. But they're part of this shift, they're part of this transition. And after the two world wars, a whole new way of perceiving existence slowly came into the fore. There was a long period when there was a sense of complete devastation, that life had no meaning, existence had no meaning. And out of that emerged the whole concept, a new concept, geopolitical and intellectual and spiritual, that world has to function on the basis of one unity, of an international organization and interaction. It was no longer limited to empires, to nations here and there. That there was an international spectrum, and the rise of all the international organizations that we had, beginning from the UN and the UNESCO, took place at that time, which today we take for granted, whatever the difficulties in running it, but we take it for granted. During this time, it's also interesting, we had the rise of communism. The rise and a bit later, the collapse of it. I mean, if we look at the major landmarks of this transition, they're unbelievable. No time in history have you had so much packed into 100 odd years. You know, I mean, a movement as powerful as international communism, which tended at one moment to sweep the world, it saw its heyday and it kind of left its imprint in the sense of what was of value in it. But as a political force, it was no longer there. It widened out. For that to happen in a few decades at one time was almost inconceivable. As this happens, in 1956, the mother announces the descent of the superman. These are factors which are of the utmost importance sometimes to remember when we look at where we are today, 2014, because all that has led to where we are. And that work to prepare for the descent of the supermind had been going on by Shobindu and the mother since the beginning of the 20th century. So along with these major upheavals and changes that took place in the world, that work of consciousness was like a parallel stream that was going on. I mean, we are in a position to see both because we have some understanding of Shobindu and Mother's work. That was also the time, for me, a sentence that Shobindu has written in his Supermind and Humanity, and which it seems I find exceedingly meaningful. The supermind has descended to intervene in the world of matter. You know, we always take it that yes, it's the next higher level of consciousness to the mind, yes. But this one sentence which Shobindu wrote at that time, the supermind's purpose of descent, is to intervene in the world of matter. And if we look at all these landmarks that we've identified, that's exactly what happened at the time. And even more so, the work being done in new physics and biology, which ran parallel to this work. And further on, when Mother was doing her work on the cells, in the body. You know, the fact that we live today in an age of computer satellite technology, we take it for granted. We take it for granted that you can do this, that, and the other, and it's a fait accompli. It has happened exactly in the time that the supermind descended. Do we sometimes see what could be the significance of the parallelism? If by working in and through consciousness, Sri Aurobindo and the Mother were to create a more subtle emergence within matter and later within the cells of the body, as the Mother spoke about, then at the same time, the physicist and the biologist, these are the two sciences that were spearheading this entire work of research, they made new discoveries which were unheard of and which completely revolutionized all previous theories of science. How did that happen? Why did the physicist make those discoveries at this particular moment? It could have been done later or after. I mean, these are things to dwell upon, to reflect upon. Then how do they tie up with this period of transition? The work ordained in matter through consciousness and the work of the scientist in his physical laboratory. And the results are material, practical, tangible for us. We have the satellite. We can pick up an ordinary mobile, we have the computer, we have everything which is networking, which is making matter more and more subtle, even gross matter like this, not only the cells of the body. So somehow, as Robert spoke to me of this evening, this is what emerged in my being, maybe because this is what is of so special an interest to me at the moment. So obviously one wishes to share what is oneself, one is occupied with in terms of research and exploring. This transition almost week by week, day by day, accentuates itself. Accentuates its points, its landmarks, and it accelerates its speed. We have to be very unobservant not to be touched by that. Now, what is this transition that Sri Aurobindo and the Mother came on earth to craft? Somehow that word of crafting comes very naturally. Because it's working it out, it is working in matter, creating it. And where are we in this transition? Where are we going? Do we have a sense of it? What do we do with to be present on earth at this tremendous moment? Once a transition is accomplished, yes, there'll be something new and happening, surely. And hopefully we'll all be part of that, like we've been part of the previous ones, the preparatory part. But the fact of being in mainstream in transition, that is something very special. And given the time that we have, in fact, it is the sense of the privilege and uniqueness of the moments. Because these moments are not to be measured in human time, like we have already covered a span of a little over 100 years. We have no idea how much more it's going to continue. But the fact that we are beings of transition, that is something which is a very, it is a special privilege of birth. because it is our soul that has sought to be part of it. That is why we are there. And I would just wish to share with everyone what is at the moment and has been for me a focus of exploration, of an attempt at understanding. And to conclude, all that Arindamda and other beings who have made it possible for us to arrive at a better understanding of things and to move ahead, our gratitude to them. Thank you.
So I was saying that I think that I must have met Arindamda for the first time in the mid-1990s, when he started accompanying Nirodh Baran when he came here to Savitri Bhavan. And as you saw in the first slides, at that time we didn't have a building. The Savitri Study Circle was going on under the trees. They joined us there in the sweltering summer heat. I don't know how we all managed it, but anyway. And that first talk which he gave in the hut, a God come down and greater by the fall, is really for me a landmark in Savitri studies and in Sri Aurobindo studies. And I'm often quoting that talk which he gave. We published a transcript of it in our second issue of our little magazine, Invocation, that came out in November 1998, I think. Or perhaps it was the next one in February. In answer to some questions from the audience, he cast such a new illuminating light, I think, for all of us on, dare I say, Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, because he was asked, I prefer, of course, to say Sri Aurobindo's teaching and vision, but he was asked, but then what you are saying, isn't all this just a play, a liar? And he said, in one sentence, he said, yes, it's a play, but it's a play with a purpose. So this is what makes all the difference. So again, he came many times. Of course, the last time that he came here was in March 2010 for the Nadkarni Memorial Lecture. I think you see from the photographs, from the talks, that we, little snippets we were able to give you, what an extremely sweet personality this was, radiating a special kind of sweetness, which I'm sure, as Asta very rightly said, it comes from his total, simple, single-minded dedication to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, from the age of 20 onwards, throughout his long life. And that was what radiated, and that's what made it a privilege to know him, and that's why we are so happy to remember him.
Well, I'm known as Robert, but my father used to call me Bobby, and I went to England when my father was invited to start the Department of Indian Philosophy and Religion at Durham University when I was four. He had been a student of Dr. Radhakrishnan's, and Dr. Radhakrishnan had been professor at Oxford University of Indian Philosophy and Religion. And then the Spalding, which was a big foundation in England, instituted some studies at the School of Oriental Studies in Durham. And that's when I, my sister and my mother went to Durham, and I pretty well stayed there ever since, apart from 1 year when I was in Calcutta. And my memory of my father really is with either the Times newspaper or books. So in my first 8 or 9 years, I was in Durham, where he was starting the department in the School of Oriental Studies, and I was at the Durham Cathedral Chorister School. But I didn't sing, because I can't sing in tune, but I enjoyed going to the cathedral services and so on. And one abiding memory is when I was first taken to the school for my interview with the headmaster, who was the Reverend John Grove, with his dog collar, and, you know, he was a Church of England priest. My father said, "Well, what about lunch? You have beef and pork, and we don't eat beef and pork." And the Reverend Grove immediately got out of his armchair, went down to the kitchen and asked for matron and said, "We've got this boy from India, and he doesn't eat beef or pork." And matron said, "Fine, fine, no problem. He will have his special lunch." So every lunchtime, I had to go to the kitchen, get my special meal, which they organized. Is that okay? So that went on until I came down to St. Paul's, where I was lucky to go because my father was never sure where I would go after prep school. And they thought I'd end up at what was called a secondary modern school there, which was not a school you really wanted to go to if you wanted some sort of decent education. Unbeknown to me, my father arranged for me to be interviewed by the Dean of St. Paul's, who was also a philosopher and an academic, as well as being Dean of St. Paul's and a governor of St. Paul's School. And I remember going to the deanery, having my interview, and he said, "Okay, we'll test you, we'll give you a test, and see if you can make the grade." Fortunately, I'd been learning Greek and Latin at Durham Cathedral Chorister School, so I took the scholarship exam, which I didn't get a scholarship, I'm afraid to say. I wasn't one of the 153 boys that Sri Aurobindo was, because 153 is the draft of the miraculous fishers of St. Paul, and there were 153 scholars at St. Paul's, of which Sri Aurobindo was one. I was not one. But I managed to pass my Greek and pass my Latin, and several years later, my father sent me to, I can't remember the exact year, he sent me to the ashram. I spent several months here, very happy months, I remember, eating at Ganpat Ram, and I gave a talk about St. Paul's and Sri Aurobindo at the school, and used to go to Medananda at the library to keep my Latin in gear, as it were. But things I remember about my father was he was not just an intellectual and academic, which of course he was of a unique and superior kind, but you know, and Moshami will probably talk a little bit more about that. Very ordinary. He gave me a love of cricket, and we had a back garden where he would play cricket with me and the boy next door with a tennis ball, because it wasn't a very big garden. And I remember always hitting it over to the other fence, which was, you know, over the fence, and we didn't give good relationships with the neighbors, but we managed. And so that is one memory, and also his regular habit of getting up every morning just before 8 o'clock, listening to the 8 o'clock news on what was then called the Home Service. It's now Radio 3. We all listen to the news, reading the Times newspaper, having his cup of tea. Then I'd go to school, and I'm sure he'd be with his books. And another abiding memory of his love of languages, he recorded, the BBC was then transmitting Russian programs, so he recorded on the old reel-to-reel Philips tape recorders all the Russian language programs, which I remember we used to say, the optimists will learn Russian and the pessimists will learn Chinese. So I'm not sure whether that still applies or not. There's a lot of other things to say, but you know, it'd be nice to meet you in due course, and it was such a touching pleasure to see so many people here, and touching to see the film that had been so lovingly made. I hope to meet you again all some other time during the course that I'm here in India, because I'm lucky to be what's called an OCI, so I'm able to stay in India as much as I want, stay in London as much as I want, and really have the best of both worlds. And I really look forward to getting to know Auroville better, Savitri Bhavan better, and to keep up my father's memory and further research and studies in that area. So, Moshumi, would you like to say a few words?
Thanks to everyone for coming here today, for his memory, to give homage to him. It's maybe most difficult for me to share something because my life is full of his memories, full of his presence. Still now it will be always. I don't know what to say, which one to leave. But Shraddhavan asked me to say something about his unknown characteristic, unknown habits, and the feelings which I have for him. I have been with him for 6 years. If you consider it in the number of years, it's not very long. But if you consider it the moments, it was like almost 24/7. I was with him in the same house. Most of the time we were spending together, talking, eating, sometimes studying, doing other work. So I'm not being big-headed, but it's true that maybe I have spent the maximum moments with him. So again, it's difficult which one to share, which one not to keep private. But one thing I must say, like, he was an, I can describe like that, I don't know how appropriate it is it. He's an extraordinary man with his ordinary life. It's very simple life. Or an ordinary man with his extraordinary life. The inner life, the inner mind, intellect, extraordinary. Outer life, living, eating, talking, very simple, very childlike. He must be a very good example, as we say. Simple living, high thinking. Very much, very, very humble person, very modest. I have seen him talking to Amal Kiran. I have seen him talking to a 3-year-old boy. Equally comfortable with both the people, both age group. I'm quite younger than him. Hardly or never I felt any age gap or generation gap with him. He always said, and he did too, me second, others first. Means whenever something comes, he will think of the other person's comfort, other person's position first, then he will think of himself. I just wanted to share a few things which you may not know, which I have come to know from him several years. So I have write down something, so I just say, see and tell you. That one point, his whole life, as Astadhi also said, as Shraddhavan also said, it was always decided by Sri Aurobindo and mother. Even when they were in their body, after finishing his education, his undergraduation, he wrote to Sri Aurobindo and asked permission, as you have seen in the film, to come in the ashram. And Sri Aurobindo asked him to see more of life. So he got married and started a family life. Again, when he got the proposal to go to Tarham University, he again wrote to mother that, shall I come to ashram now? Mother said, no, you should see more of world now. So he went to Tarham University. He himself told me that if you I never had a professional ambition, but my dream was, if I become a professor sometime, it should be Oxford University. And the Later, for invitation for a chair professorship from Oxford University, he received, together with the mother's permission, to be an ashramite. He chosen to be the ashramite. He left his professional career and came to ashram. He was a person from whom I got immense love, affection, adoration, faith, everything. My life is full of his presence, his experience. I never could think that I will be alone, I will be without him. But I believe he's there. And another thing is very important, his conscious mind. Even when he was in nursing home in his last days, mind was terribly active. He used to ask someone to read newspapers to him. I asked, will you like me to read some book to you? He said, bring Sri Aurobindo's Introduction to Yoga. And we read together. One day he asked me what happened to Gilani. That time that Pakistan problem was going on. It's just maybe 6 days or 7 days before he passed away. I was so surprised. Rather, I was not much aware that time. I was much more worried about his health. He said, where is Pakistan going on? And I asked someone, my friend who was standing there, I said, what is he talking about? I said, yeah, haven't you seen the newspaper? He still remembered that the other day he heard something from the newspaper, Gilani problem is going on. So that conscious his mind was. Another, some unknown aspect of him, he was a very good singer. Very, very good singer. That Sachinder Barman, very famous singer and composer from West Bengal, once Professor Basu met him and he said, in Bengali I'm saying, then I can translate it into English. Golakhana to khasha, gaan koren na ken. Means you have a nice voice, why don't you sing? He was a professional cricketer for some time in Calcutta. He played professional cricket for a club. It's British time probably. And Robert will also know he was a very good cook. Not a very foodie person, but very encouraging about cooking and quite a lot of interest. And Robert has told me that he used to cook for him also. What was that? Egg curries and chicken curries. Okay, one weekend it is egg curry, other weekend it is chicken curry. Not a lot of variation. So, another thing just came in my mind. Once, when he was teaching in Durham, he used to come to ashram every year in the darshan. Once mother asked him, how is your work going on? He said, during the week, I teach in the university, and in the weekend, sometime I'm invited to the center, London Center, Sri Aurobindo Center, and I give a talk there. And then he added, I don't talk about you and master unless I am asked. Mother said that is the right kind of attitude. The light within us will glow in its, it will glow within its, sorry, I just see the line. The light within us will go in itself. So he never liked to do propaganda. But again, mother gave him some instruction that wherever you are invited or asked to talk about me and Sri Aurobindo, you should do. What if your health permits, you are movable. Throughout his life, till the age of 93, he followed mother's instruction. Wherever he was invited, he went there and gave always a very beautiful talk. As everyone was touched by that. His last talk in his lifetime was at the age of 93, it's 2011. He went to Calcutta, and that was his last talk. So many aspects have left, I know, but these are the very touching aspects which I feel for him. Thanks to everyone again for coming here. Thank you.
Being at St. Paul's, perhaps not everybody is aware that it's the same St. Paul's that Sri Aurobindo attended, and even the same building. Robert was there in a time when that old building was still up. And the other day when we were talking about that time, we realized that he and I might have crossed in the street outside St. Paul's School in about 1968 or 69. But now it is no longer there. They have shifted the school and that beautiful old building has been taken down. So, who would like to share something? I'll bring the microphone to whoever would like to speak.
I came to Pondicherry as a student at the ashram in 1969. And when I joined the higher course, Arindam Dao was my teacher. And the course that he did with me for two straight years was studying the essays on the Gita. And this was, the higher course had a very free system of education. So it wasn't like he stood in front of the class and lectured anybody. It was a one-to-one class. I met him weekly in a private session at the Sri Aurobindo Ashram library. Did it go up? And we read a chapter a week, and I had for homework to summarize the entire chapter. I spent hours doing it because I felt I had to do it for his sake, because I looked up to him as a role model and a shining example of living that particular philosophy of the Gita. And what I think I imbibed from him was the basic core teaching of the essays on the Gita. And I feel that my whole life focused itself in the direction, so that ever since then, whenever anything in life has occurred, I have looked at the Gita as my reference. And it's only because of Arindam Dao that I walked on that path and used it as a reference. So every moment that I spent with him as a student has gone on to live with me and helped me throughout my life to orient myself on a spiritual path. There were other things. I've met him at other times, and he always checked with me about how things were. But that foundation was laid when I was a student, and I never forgot that. And I'm deeply grateful to him for having given me that. Thank you.
So I think I'll go along the same lines like Kirti, but I'm much junior to her. So I joined the ashram school in 1985. And while graduating, Arindam Dao was one of my professors, because of course I was very interested in Sri Aurobindo's teachings, and that was my major subject. And I had essays on the Gita as well with Arindam Dao. And I think his simplicity and the way of teaching, like many other professors, have left an impression which carried me through a good 20, 25 years now, all through my life. And I'm very grateful to him for the way he taught. And it was also a one-to-one class, as you were mentioning, Kirti. And a lot of homework. Of course, at that time, I didn't understand how to go about it. I was only 18, but he guided me. He encouraged me. He never said, it's not possible. And even later on, when I was doing my master's in philosophy and then in sociology, every time he would meet me on the road, he would ask, how are you? Carry on. Don't forget the base that you have. And I'm extremely grateful to be here at this moment to remember him. Thank you so much.
Once or twice, I went to his house to invite him on behalf of Shraddhavan to give lectures to Sai in Savitri Bhavan, and I found him to be very hospitable, gave me a seat and asked me about Savitri Bhavan and how it is going. And he told me Savitri Bhavan is very much near to his house, and he will always come to Savitri Bhavan whenever he is asked to come. And I was touched by his humility and also his knowledge. And also I have attended one or two of our lectures, which illumined my knowledge very much and consciousness very much. A simple man who lived what he spoke. Thank you.
I can just add one word. I feel now that he is no longer with us in the physical to be consulted, I have lost someone to whom I could turn to ask questions about Sri Aurobindo's teaching. Now I don't know who to ask except the Lord himself. But, with Arindamda, I was always very sure that what he told me was accurate and precise and correct. So thank you all very much for joining us. For joining Robert and Musumi and Aster and all together, a special occasion. Thank you for being with us. I think there are still some refreshments left if you like to enjoy. We can say au revoir.